As a teenager growing up in Southern California, William Claxton loved jazz music and taking photographs. He hung out in jazz clubs, talking with the musicians and shooting pictures. Later, he became one of the most sought-after photographers of jazz album covers and also did work for magazines and books. Claxton's work from the 50s and early 60s has been collected in a new book called Jazz, published by 12 Trees Press. These photos of musicians such as Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, Duke Ellington, Billie Holiday, Sarah Vaughan, and Chet Baker capture the mood of the period. They are dramatically composed, shot in black and white using existing light, and many are taken through a haze of cigarette smoke.
Most of these pictures were taken between 1953 and 1963, and that was during the big LP boom, when all of a sudden LPs were very important, and also the jazz recording boom. And most of the shots were in recording studios or on sound stages, and the backgrounds are pretty plain and bleak. But that was better for me in the sense, because then the subject sort of jumped out at the camera.
I think knowing the musicians and knowing about jazz, you are able to get some really characteristic poses. There's a photograph of Bill Evans in which he's hunched over the piano. It's a very dark photograph, and really the only light is the light reflected off of his face. And his face is so bent over, it's nearly touching the keyboard that he's playing.
Yes, he was very concentrated. He didn't even know I was there. I don't think he was so concentrated in what he was doing. But I love that picture because you only see just a few slight features, but just enough to know it's Bill Evans.
You have a photograph of Thelonious Monk at the piano. And it's interesting to me, he's not making eye contact with the camera. It looks like he's not really looking at anything, that although his eyes are focused outward, he's really just totally focused inward on what he's playing.
Yes, well, that was in San Francisco, and it was, we had to do a record cover, had to photograph a record cover, and we photographed a few things, like the record company wanted, out on a cable car and that sort of thing. And finally I said, let's just stop and have lunch. So we had lunch, and he had quite a few drinks and got relaxed. And he said, I know a hall we can go to. And so we went to this big empty hall. We just walked in. No one was around. And he sat down, and he was just wonderful. He just gave me a personal, private concert right there. And he had that sort of vacant stare because I think he was feeling what he had taken inside and also just concentrated on his music.
Were there a lot of very corny type of shots that were typical of jazz photographs that you really wanted to make sure you broke away from in your own work?
Yes, during that period, or just prior to the period that I got involved, I always noticed that the in thing for quote jazz photographs was always harsh flashlights and very contrasting pictures and lots of sweat and lots of distortion in the face of the musician while he was playing. And I didn't really see much of that. I walked in and into a recording session. Everybody was sort of gentle and pleasant and soft lighting, and it established a whole different mood and feeling, both, I guess, through my personality and how I saw it and the way things were recorded out here on the West Coast at the time.
One of your photographs is a scene outside of the club Birdland, the New York club, and a couple of people are walking into the club, and standing outside of it is a saxophonist who, I must say, looks very strung out. I don't know if he was or not. You say that the photograph was shot at 4 in the morning. Is there a story behind that photograph?
Yes, I'm afraid that was a setup shot.
Oh.
And I did it on purpose because I was trying to get the mood of New York at the time and the feeling outside of Birdland. And there was always a lot of young, rather sad musicians hoping to get into Birdland, either to listen or to play, and many of them couldn't even afford to get in, and I noticed that all the time. So I had this young actor friend, a fellow named Ben Carruthers, and he just stood around and I photographed him, and to get that mood, what was characteristic of what happened outside of Birdland during the 50s.
It looks very realistic, even though it's a setup.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you about another photograph.
Mm-hmm.
You have a wonderful photograph of Charlie Parker, surrounded by three of his fans, and he looks very happy, happy in a way that you don't usually see him in photographs. There's a big smile on his face. He looks very, very healthy, very well rested. What's the story behind that picture?
Well, I'd heard of Charlie Parker, but never seen him, and I was dying to see him. And this is also very, very early in my career. I was still going to school, and I was living at my parents' house in Pasadena. And I'd heard that he was at the old Tiffany Club down in Los Angeles, so I packed up my my Speed graphic camera, my 4x5 film plates, and dashed down there and spent the entire evening photographing him. And I got to meet him, and he was terribly nice. And at the end of the evening, around 2 or 3 in the morning, several of his fans and he wanted to go have some food. And then we couldn't find an all-night restaurant, so I invited him to my parents' house in Pasadena. And they were out of town. And he spent the whole weekend with us, with a little group of young people, and we just sat around in awe listening to him talk and feeding him and taking care of him and making sure he was happy.
Did you take more photographs of him that weekend?
Yeah, I took quite a few pictures. In fact, I always hate to talk about ones that got destroyed, but we had a lovely swimming pool, and it was a summer day. And at one point, I got a picture of him totally naked with just his horn standing on a diving board, smiling and playing. And that I had a flood in my studio several years ago, and that picture disappeared.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Do you believe in photogenic? Do you think that certain people are more photogenic than others?
Oh, yeah, of course. I think that happens. And some people respond to the camera much better than others, aside from being photogenic. But like Jerry Mulligan just innately knows what to do in front of a camera and still not be disturbed by your presence or by the lens, the presence of lights or cameras. And then, of course, Chet Baker, I guess, is possibly maybe the most photogenic jazz musician of all time. I don't know. I could never take a bad picture of him.
How did you start taking pictures?
Oh, when I was 13 or 14 years old, the boy that lived down the street was a amateur photographer and a very, very good chemist and physicist and scientific type fellow. And he took classes in photography, and he taught me. And I think I was always a voyeur anyway. I always liked looking through keyholes and cracks in doors and windows. And the camera just gave me a legitimate reason to do such things.
I'm wondering if the musicians who you photographed ever did things to protect things that they wanted to keep private, if they ever drew the line for you of what you could and what you could not photograph them doing.
Oh, I think so, yeah. I think that I was always a discreet person that way, too. I think that if I saw anything going on that that I'm sure a musician did not want to be photographed doing, I just didn't photograph it. I'd put my camera down, and therefore they didn't feel threatened by me. They knew I wasn't going to do that.
I remember one musician, and I won't say who, telling me that on one of his album covers that he was actually very, very high when it was photographed, and he'd been really sick right before the picture was taken, so he was never really happy with his album cover. And I wonder if you ever went through something like that, of photographing a musician knowing that they were not in good shape at the time the picture was being taken.
Yes, that happened quite often, in fact. But I never wanted to show anybody, and I still don't, in any sad moment. I don't like to see anybody, especially a talented, creative person as they're, nodding off asleep under drugs. I think I just don't have any reason to do that. If I did do it, I wouldn't let it be published. But yes, I was around a great deal of that. And when I was quite young, it was amazing that I survived a lot of that because I was experimenting myself.
What do you think kept you from getting a habit yourself?
Being so young and impressionable, I probably would have been tempted to try it. But I think it was my first trip to New York as a young person, like 17 or 18, and being invited to a big party where I did see a very well-known musician at the time shoot up and keel over and die right in front of me. And that just put the fear in me. I would never do such a thing to myself.
The photographs in your new book are all from the 50s and 60s. Are you still taking photographs of jazz musicians?
Not very much. Only I'd like to. Not that I wouldn't want to. It's just that only when a record company calls me and says, hey, we'd like you to do a record cover, and then I go and see the artist and spend time with them and photograph them.
Well, seeing your photographs in print now, seeing this new book of your photographs, do you think that's going to inspire you to go out and photograph more jazz musicians?
I think so. I'm getting turned on again. I know I've been listening to more jazz because of it, and getting back in the groove again, as it were.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your photographs.
Well, thank you very much for asking me.
William Claxton's new book, Jazz, is published by 12 Trees Press in Pasadena, California. Claxton is currently the art director for Motor Trend magazine. This is Fresh Air.